Today on the Mike O'Mara Show.
This is where I would just go, please take me now.
Oh, no.
I would say, I would present to this man.
You would present?
Sean Connery. The late Sean Connery. Wait, I like my men rugged.
You presented to Sean Connery. Here's what you'd hear. Pull those up and turn around.
And that's what this book is about, is don't be scared. Yeah, that first mile is going to suck, and you may not even run a mile in the first day. But if you work at it long enough and hard enough, you can overcome that voice in your head that's saying you're not going to be able to make it through this marathon, and you will be able to accomplish those dreams and goals.
Wow. Oscar, I know you wanted to ask Nick a question.
Nick,
as well.
Look, we're on the same page, but what do you say to people that don't want to work?
That would have really changed the mood on the set, or actually during the movie, The Blue Lagoon. If Brooke Shields
they
had
were
been
children.
That way.
They were children, so be careful.
They had a baby in that movie, though.
Yeah, they had a baby in that. They did. Funny.
How do you remember that?
he just does.
All that and more. The Mike O'Mara Show starts now. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. You can listen to The Mike O'Mara Show at MikeOMaraShow.com.
Let's get started.
It's The Mike O'Mara Show with Mike O'Mara, Oscar Santana, and Rob Spiewak. Now, here's Mike.
Welcome to The Mike O'Mara Show. We are enjoying our second decade of the show that has become a daily routine for thousands of listeners in great places like Deer Park, Washington, Columbia, Missouri, Fishers, Indiana, Stratton, Vermont, Beatrice, Nebraska, and Darkhan, Mongolia. The Mike O'Mara Show is on now, and we're going to have some fun here. This is really, really a great special get for me. I'm very, very excited. It's time for us to talk to this gentleman, the King of the Wire. He is known for his high wire performances without a safety net. He holds 7 Guinness World Records for various acrobatic feats. He is the man from the great family of the Flying Willendas. And where's Nick Willenda?
There he is.
Hi, Nick. Yay. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I am. I'm so, so excited to get you on the show. Just refreshing, looking at some old videos of your exploits, and when you, it's one thing to watch you on a big screen TV, where I've watched so many of your performances,
right,
if you want to call them that. We got so many questions for you, but the idea of watching on my little computer and still getting the goosebumps years after you walked across the Grand Canyon, and I'm watching that, and I'm remembering hanging on that and watching our good friend Willie Geist and the entire broadcast. It was I just am so thrilled to get you on the show. And Rob said, would you like to talk to Nick Willenda? I was so very, very excited. So it's very cool to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor to be here.
First question for you, Nick Willenda. How the heck does it work? How does it work? I mean, I've watched you. I've watched the Niagara Falls. I've watched the Grand Canyon. Didn't watch the volcano, but I saw it recently. My God, wearing a gas mask and you're doing all that.
Yeah.
The actual, you've been doing this since you were a child. You come from the Flying Willendas. As a 61-year-old, I have a memory of the Flying Willendas. I remember, I go back a long way, knowing your family. The actual, you look at it, even when you're carrying, is it the balance bar? Is that what you call
That's
it?
Correct.
The balance bar?
Balancing pole, yeah.
Balancing pole?
Yep.
How the hell do you do it, Nick? I don't get it.
You know, you mentioned it. I started at a young age. In fact, my mom was 6 months pregnant with me and still walking the wire. So I've been on a wire longer than my feet have been on terra firma. But really started walking a wire when I was about 18 months old, about 2 feet off the ground. So to be honest with you, that part comes very natural. And that's why I've been blessed with these opportunities or taken these exploits to places like the Grand Canyon, Niagara Falls, and been able to accomplish those feats because of the experience that I have. It is truly life to me. My great-grandfather, Carl Willenda, said it best. He said, life is on the wire and everything else is just waiting. And for our family, that's very true. In fact, this morning before I got on the show here, I was on a wire training. It is just what I do every day. Not because I have to. It's because it's my passion. It's what I enjoy doing.
Is it like a great musician where when you say you were training this morning, is it daily? Is it weekly? How often do you have to do it in order to make sure that the skills are always there?
So I train approximately 4 or 5 days a week in the off season. Leading up to an event, I'll train 7 days a week, often 8 hours a day on that wire. And of course, with these, you know, these latest challenges I've taken on, you mentioned the volcano, it is a very unique training. It's specific training, I guess I should say. I train with a gas mask, actually train with an oxygen deprivation mask that brought my oxygen levels down to about 25% of what I normally take in, so that I was prepared for that gas mask that I'd have to wear over that volcano. I train on a wire that is rigged much less stable than the one I'll walk over. I train with wind machines that create gusts of up to 90 miles per hour. I train in torrential downpours. I live in Florida. We often have tropical storms. And if there's not lightning in the air, I get on the wire and I'm training. It is just incredible opportunity for me every time that that a tropical storm comes through.
You know, we have enough kickers when we're doing our news about Florida that it's nice to have something we're proud of in Florida. So I want to say that's, I'm a Floridian as well. So I live down here in Fort Myers. You were born after the tragedy with your great grandfather, Carl Wallenda, who, you know, it was very public. You mention Carl very often when you talk about your inspiration. Even though you never met the man, he's always with you. Yes. Is there any particular reason? Do you know that? Is it the history of him being the patriarch of the family? Why is he a man you never had contact with? Why is he so important to you when you're talking about being inspired?
Yeah, look, I would say that he was extremely innovative. He was extremely creative. I certainly have that gene was passed on to me. I have the same passions that he does. But the reality is I wouldn't do what I do if it wasn't for him. I wouldn't have the career that I have. I don't even consider it a job. It is, again, it's what I love doing. But he is the one who brought our family over to the United States in 1928 to perform on Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus and really paved the road. You know, when I had to get permission to walk across Niagara Falls, I had to change two laws, one in the United States that was over 100 years old, as well as one in
that.
Canada,
yeah.
Just to get permission to walk. And the senators and congressmen that I knocked on the doors of wouldn't have even opened that door if it wasn't for that Wallenda name, in my opinion. They recognized that name and that opened that door. Well, that name would be nothing without my great-grandfather. So that is one of the reasons why he's so important to me personally. But he was a very inspirational person. Of course, someone that is it is known throughout history of being one of the greatest wire walkers in history. And I do everything I do to sort of shine a spotlight out of respect and pay respect to him, again, because he paved the way for me to get to where I am today.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
It's kind of crazy when you think that you are a seventh generation person in this field of work, and that, not to minimize what you do, but your name, not to say it's a punchline, it is synonymous. I mean, even in older films, they mention, when they mention performers and daredevils, they say, oh, what are you, a Wallenda? You know, it's, and so, I mean, when, at what age did you realize you were part of something so special? Because this is not, I mean, you're an amazing performer, but it goes back so long and you're born into this dynasty. Did it ever really sink in when you're a kid, or were you older when you realized that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my family history dates back to the 1780s, so well over 200 years.
Wow.
My family have been performing on wires. Started back in Bohemia, eventually worked their way into Europe and Germany, and then they made their way, again, as I mentioned, to the United States in 1928. But I would say, again, it was so normal to me to be sitting on the ground and looking up and seeing my parents walking on a wire. Every one of my family members walked the wire. There are 16 of us that currently perform to this day. It is just what we do. When we have a family reunion, we have chicken fights on the wire. You know, it's just the way we live our lives. So it was more life to me. You know, people look at what I do and say, well, it's so crazy and it's so dangerous, and how do you have the nerves to do that? But the reality was, it was so natural. In fact, I just wrote my second book called Facing Fear. Yeah. And I had never experienced fear in my life until we had a bad accident about 3 years ago where we were attempting to break our family's world record for the highest 4-level 8 person pyramid. Pyramid collapsed. I caught the wire, which I've trained to do my entire life, but 5 of my family members and friends fell to the ground. Didn't know who was going to live, who was not going to live. In fact, we were pretty sure my sister wasn't going to make it through that. And I got back on the wire the next day. Family history is, you get back up, show must go on. That's what my family does.
Your great grandfather did it, right?
Yeah. That is correct. Yeah, 1970 in 62, the pyramid fell. He snuck out of the hospital the next day and got on the wire against the doctor's orders.
So, wow!
Again,
wow.
Carrying on this tradition. So I got back on the wire and performed for about 6 weeks straight, and then took some time off. And that's when I started to experience these emotions of fear. And again, it was nothing I'd ever experienced, at least on the wire. Of course, I knew what fear was, but never on the wire. And it was extremely confusing to me because I'd get on the wire and I started to physically tremble. And I didn't know what was going on. It was nothing that was ever familiar because walking the wire was so normal to me. And I'd never experienced that before. So again, the book that I wrote really is about the experience and what it took for me to overcome fear. Because, and I wrote it, to be honest, to the average day person, not to wire walkers. They're very few. I wouldn't sell a whole lot of copies if I wrote it to them. But
Oscar, just give me a second, because yeah, sure. I want to ask Nick about the book. The book is Facing Fear. It's available at Walmart at the Mike O'Mara Shopping Center. And I wanted to ask you about it because I think that what I read, the bio of the book, that when they were explaining the book to me, that and when you hear some of your specifically when I was watching the Grand Canyon walk, you mention praise Jesus, well, give you yep. strength. It sounds religious. I wrote this down. Is your book Fear, is it a religious book? Is it a religious book?
No, not really. It's more practical. Now, of course, that is intertwined. That's who I am. I am a man of faith. I believe it applies to everybody, but it is more of a book that is practical of here's the steps that I took. And really a large part of the book talks about the internal dialogue that every one of us deal with. And whether it be getting up on stage to speak to a crowd and your mind saying you're going to sound like a fool or getting nervous about that, or many people this day and age are scared to leave their house. And when I wrote this book, the pandemic actually had just begun and I was writing the last chapter and I actually added to that last chapter, but it was about hopefully freeing people from fear so that they will pursue their dreams and their goals and their ambitions. Because I believe that so many people in society today are too scared to go to work. They hate their job. And they're too scared to leave their job because there is complacency, there is comfort, there's safety in the fact that there's a paycheck at the end of the week, but they're miserable. And the goal of this book was to inspire people to pursue your dreams. Now, don't leave your job so you can't pay your mortgage, but pursue your dream job at the same time. I think so many people, again, just settle. Because, hey, it's what I've done. I think so many people have big dreams and ambitions of going much further in life or climbing the highest mountain or running that marathon, but they never run that first mile to get to that marathon. And that's what this book is about, is don't be scared. Yeah, that first mile is going to suck and you may not even run a mile in the first day. But if you work at it long enough and hard enough, you can overcome that voice in your head that's saying you're not going to be able to make it through this marathon and you will be able to accomplish those dreams and goals.
Wow. Oscar, I know you wanted to ask Nick a question.
Nick,
as well.
Look, we're on the same page, but what do you say to people that don't want to work?
Well, you show up a minute before the interview starts and you lay that on him right away.
Our government's given them a lot of options, I'll put it that way.
I have so many weird questions that might sound a little bit naive, but I want to ask you, how do you decide where you're going to do your next big event? I mean, how do you decide Niagara Falls? How do you decide? I know there's a little history when you walked where your great grandfather had wire walked, but how do you put that together? Is it random? Do you plan it? Yeah. What happens?
Often it is just ideas that I'll have. Sometimes it'll be a dream. The volcano was, I was flying to Mexico City for a corporate speaking event. And as I was flying in, my wife was with me and I was looking out the window and we flew over an active volcano, a very famous one in Mexico City. And as I flew over, I looked out and I pointed to my wife. I said, look, that's an active volcano. You could just see the smoke. You couldn't see the lava. Mm-hmm. And she said, wow, that's awesome. And I said, you know what? I want to walk over a volcano. And she sort of rolled her eyes and was like, yeah, well, I guess that's what you're doing next, because she knows how I work. And once I set my mind to something, I'll do whatever it takes to make it happen. And within 4 years of that, I walked over an active volcano. But again, sometimes it's just dreams. It's just thoughts. It's ideas. It's challenging, to be honest, as my career progresses, where do you go next? I mean, in fact, I'm currently working on attempting to do a stunt. It won't be wire walking, but in outer space, because the reality is you run out of things to do. And so I'm open for suggestions for sure. If you want any callers to call in and give me some ideas.
Does your
Does
she just have a patented eye roll, or do they vary with the different ideas? Because, I mean, the whole volcano. I have a question about when you train. I'm fascinated by the fact that you simulate conditions. It makes perfect sense. The rain and the oxygen deprivation. But when you're training and, you know, you hold the world record for the highest wire walk, when you train for that, can you train for a high wire walk on a lower wire and then simulate it in such a way that that counts as training? Or how do you do that?
Yeah, so it is a mind game. The reality is the wire is the same, whether it's 2 feet off the ground or 1,000 feet off the ground. And it's about where I allow my mind to go. And it's about controlling that inner dialogue. So what I would tell you is when I'm on that wire 2 feet off the ground, I am visualizing myself being over that active volcano, over the Grand Canyon. But it's a lot of visualization that I have to do in my mind. So again, that's the only way I can train for that height. It is all about mind games. And if we can control our thoughts, I think we can control anything in life. And that's really what my whole life story is about. And that's why I've been successful, is because up until that accident, I was able to control that inner dialogue.
Wow. Well, you know, the talking part is, I know I've looked at my wife and said, you know, how can he have a running dialogue?
Right.
He's over the Grand Canyon. Is that part of the mind game? Does that help when you are talking, when you communicating with your father and you are speaking to other people? Does that help you when you're walking the wire?
There are times it does. When I was walking across the Grand Canyon, I got hit with 43-mile-an-hour gusts of wind.
No, you said you don't want to talk at one point, right? You said, I don't want to talk.
That's right. My dad started talking to me and telling me, hey, that was 43-mile-an-hour winds. And I was like, Dad, I don't care how much the wind is. I just want to get to the other side. I don't want to talk right now. So it just depends. It often depends on my safety, my comfort, all of that. But growing up in the backyard, even growing up and raising children, I remember being on the wire 15 feet up in the backyard training and my kids bickering and disciplining them. I remember walking across the Allegheny River in Pittsburgh. I was about 300 feet up. It was raining. My wire shoes were left behind, so I was wearing nothing but socks. Looking down and seeing my children fighting over their Game Boy because they were walking along the bridge as I walked and thinking I need to discipline them and going, holy crap. I'm 200 feet up and I'm thinking about my kids. I need to focus on what I'm doing. There are also times where I'm on a wire walking between a couple skyscrapers and I literally go, the hell kind of occupation is this? What am I doing for a living?
I am such a fanboy when it comes to when Rob said this, because you have, and I'm sure you've been told this before, and I don't like to gush when I have a guest on, but I am going to gush here, because you have a magnetism that comes across on camera and also comes across with these events where people are more invested, I think, in you than a lot of other. Can I call you a daredevil? I mean, you are a daredevil.
Sure.
People just because you do that, you are not only great at what you do, but you have that TV personality that comes through and that does it. I frankly don't want you to go to space, Nick. I just don't want you to do it. I don't think it's a good idea.
I think it's funny just touching on what you were saying. I think what people are fascinated with Nick Wallenda with me is the fact that I'm so normal. Like, I mean, I raised three kids and I bleed like everybody else. And I have the same issues as everybody else when I'm not on the wire. And, you know, the same arguments with my wife and the same financial struggles growing up. And, you know, I've been through all of that. So, and I try to always just be real. I don't try to put on a show or put on some persona of being this daredevil that hangs out in bars and whatever. I'm just who I am. And I think people like that, is the fact that, again, I'm just real. And again, even my faith, which comes out a lot of times because that's where I find my peace often when I'm on that wire. I think people respect that because it's not forced. I'm not trying to preach to anyone. I'm just living my life out in the open.
Amen. Yeah. I'm with you with that. And I respect that. And I get it. I get it with my mother, who had a lot of faith as well at the end of her life.
Yeah.
And she did that. I want to ask about the family. When you mentioned, I forgot how many family members are involved. Are there other members of the family, younger Wallendas coming up? Are there any future stars we should be aware of to carry the torch or the balance pole?
Yeah. Yeah, there are. So my nephew, my sister's son, is an eighth generation, and he is now 9 years old and practices every single day on his own. Never told to practice, just enjoys it, loves it. I think he will certainly carry on the legacy. I have three children. I say they're children. I've got a 23-year-old Marine. I've got a 19-year-old currently serving our country in the Army over in Belgium, and I've got an 18-year-old daughter that's in nursing school. So they have chosen not to carry it on. But what I will tell you is all of them have walked the wire. All of them are good. In fact, I was doing a photo shoot for Time Magazine about 8 months ago. My Marine was home and he helped me. We put up a wire on the beach for a photo shoot, and he was on the wire in between shots. And again, I was trying to knock him off the wire because it's part of our training, just playing. I couldn't knock him down. Again, so they are great at it, but don't have the same, you know, we as parents really encourage them to pursue their own dreams. My wife comes from eight generations of circus on one side, seven on the other, third oldest circus in the world, holds two Guinness World Records herself, one for hanging by her teeth under a helicopter 400 feet over Niagara Falls. So she has the same sort of genes as me, but we started performing at such a young age. And with our kids, we were very careful and actually didn't allow them to perform because we wanted them to sort of have a choice. And what I mean by that is my parents, and I wrote my first book called Balance, it talks about the story of how my parents didn't want me to carry on the industry because they didn't feel like there was a future in it. In fact, my mom wrote a book called The Last of the Walendas in the 80s. My great-grandfather in his book that he wrote in the 70s said, in the circus world, one day you eat the chicken, the next day you eat the feathers. That was the life that we grew up in. So my parents didn't want to see me live with those struggles. But I'd performed from such a young age. I started performing it too, not on the wire, but as a clown actually, and had that sort of that itch, that bug. And then, you know, it's like an addiction. You can't get away from it. I'm sure you love what you do and you'll continue to do it because you enjoy it.
I eat the feathers every day, Nick.
Yeah, a lot of feathers.
Every damn day I eat the feathers.
His pillows are very flat.
I was eating really rare chicken for a long time, and now I am sucking on feathers every single day. I want to ask you, we only have a few more minutes. I want to ask this question. The circus, you mentioned it, your mom writing the book, that it's not continuing. The idea of the circus, you know, it's not where it used to be in that world.
That's right.
You know, people know you not necessarily from the circus. Two questions. The future of this type of entertainment, what does it hold and where do you think it's going? And two, to see Walendas perform or to see anybody that is in the business, can we do it without having to have the major event over the Grand Canyon? I know that's a loaded question, but I'm curious.
Yeah. So what I would say is I think the future of the circus will come back. I think it'll come back in a big way. I do believe there is a future there. I think it's really the challenge that we've had is, to be honest, mainstream media has painted a negative connotation of what a circus is. In fact, Washington, D.C. is always referred to as a circus. Well, the reality is circus is extremely organized.
True.
In fact,
right on.
You know, back when my grandmother was touring with Ringling Brothers, they would put up an arena, basically. It was a big top, but it would seat 7,000 people. And you would go to bed one night and wake up the next morning and an arena would be set up in your city. Talk about organization. 800 draft show horses on that show alone that toured on that train. I mean, that was when Ringling was massive.
Yep. Yeah.
So again, and at that point, it was the only form of entertainment. Now, of course, media has painted a negative connotation. I think even cartoons with my kids growing up watching shows like SpongeBob that paint this cheesy image of what a circus is. Well, a circus is an extremely beautiful art. And I will tell you that after every performance, it's important to me that I meet every fan. So I will wait out there and sign autographs till the last person leaves. It's just who I am because they are the reason why my brand is where it is. And after every circus I've performed in, they will come up and say, the next generation will say, wow, we had no idea what to expect, and this is amazing. So I think circus will carry on. I think it's going to change a little bit. Look, Cirque du Soleil changed it a little bit, and they were very successful for a long time. I think it's going to be about involving more technology. But again, that art of circus, well, look at America's Got Talent. How long has that show been on the air? 20 years or so? It's circus acts over and over again. I mean, that's really what it boils down to.
Absolutely.
And people are fascinated
variety.
With it.
So variety.
It's just the way way that it's presented, I think, might have to change a bit. In the last chapter of my book, I talk about one of my fears, which is trying to rejuvenate, reinvent the circus. It is a big, big goal of mine. It's something that I'm currently pursuing and working on as we speak, and hopefully be able to make a big announcement soon about a release of that. As far as seeing the Willendas perform, I had recently, actually early on in the pandemic, I was one of the first drive-in shows that ever released.
Completely forgot about that. So cool.
I mean, brilliant. I said that on the show. Remember that?
I do.
I said, that is so you. That is so brilliant. And those were overwhelmingly successful. And you gave people an opportunity to do that. I forgot that. Yeah, I'm mad at myself for forgetting that.
We got it.
That's awesome.
That's a really cool opportunity, because what it was you drive in, you can sit in your car and turn into our closed circuit radio station, and you could actually hear the show. You could get out if you wanted and stay in your parking space. We socially distanced parking spaces. But what I did was I reached out to all my Daredevil friends that had nothing to do. So the best of the best, in fact, there were 23 Guinness World Record holders on that show. It was sort of the best of the best when it came to Daredevils, from the greatest human ball in history to myself walking a wire, my wife doing a stunt under a helicopter, you name it. It was way more bang for your buck. I did it not to make money. I did it to entertain and inspire people. And it was extremely successful. And so that is something that we had been doing. We're hoping that we're out of that, or we're getting out of that phase. And that we're able to open up actually regular shows. I'm working on, again, on launching a tour. Hopefully sometime later this year, it'll begin.
And last question for you, Nick. I'm going to ask you how you want to be remembered. And I asked that under the guise of saying, I hope you are, fall asleep at the age of 102. Yep. And would you, what's the one thing you would like people? Oh, did we lose Nick? Did we lose him? Was that, is he gone? Is he gone?
Oh, he's back. He's back. There he is. Back.
How would you like to be remembered?
I would say, as somebody that's inspirational, it's always my goal. It early on in my career was about impressing people. Of course, young, wanted to impress girls and everybody and be the coolest and the baddest and all of that stuff. But the reality is, as I got older, I realized that to leave a legacy, I had to inspire people. And that's really what it's about to me, is inspiring people that nothing is impossible, that you can overcome the greatest challenges. Really quick, my sister had fallen in that accident. I'll kind of close out with this, and didn't think she was going to live. But not only did she recover from an accident where she'd literally broken every bone in her face, 73 screws and plates in her face alone, in a coma for days, weeks, didn't know if she was going to ever walk again at that point. Not only did she recover, but she got back on a wire. The first walk she ever got back on. Now, mind you, she trained after she got out of the hospital. In fact, within weeks, still in the wheelchair, she's like, can you help me up? I just want to stand on a wire and see if I can do it. But not only did she get back up, but she got on a wire that was three times higher and four times longer than any wire that she'd ever walked in her career, and walked over Times Square with me live on ABC. So if that's not inspiration, if our family hasn't inspired people, I don't know what we're doing wrong. But that is truly my goal, is to inspire. And I think that's where you leave a legacy, is inspiring others for generations to come.
Nick Willenda's book is Facing Fear, available at Walmart at the Mike O'Mara Show Shopping Center. What an honor to talk to you. I wish you continued success. You're a great guy.
Thanks so much.
Good luck, Nick, and thanks so much for taking the time. And please come back, even if it's briefly, to tell us about your next big event. We'd love to hear from you, okay?
Sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Nick. Nick Willenda. That's awesome. We have to take a break. When we come back, more fun and more thrills on the Mike O'Mara Show. Including what my son wrote on his Nerf gun. Maybe cause for concern.
Oh,
we'll be right back, everybody. Hit the thingy, Rob.
I was in pain
on my angry deathbed.
Oh, boy, you.
It's my aching belly, my diverticulitis, which is flaring up.
You're going to cry, bitty baby. Huh? You're going to fucking cry.
Look at him, he's crying.
It's going to be embarrassing, but since I have no material left on the show today, and I'm cloudy, and I'm having trouble reading, I will tell you it's because I wore two tight pants.
Does stress get at it?
Yes, the stress of that last segment. Stress of old promos, the stress of no guests.
I drink your milkshake, Eli.
Mike O'Mara is killing himself for you. Are you so selfish that you can't show some damn common decency and buy a bonus show subscription? He gives and gives day after day, and you sit out there with your hand out like a selfish You're killing him. How dare you? Click the banner at MikeO'MaraShow.com and buy a bonus show subscription today, for the love of God.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show, brought to you by Cornerstone. You know, the housing market is strengthening, which creates a buzz about mortgage rates increasing. Oh, no!
Yeah. Oh, Oh, no.
Talk about gloom and doom in the mortgage industry, but don't be fooled. There's still great things happening. Happened to me last week. Thank you, Cornerstone. Thank you, Joanna. Mortgage interest rates are still half a percentage point lower than they were this time last year. Your home's value has gone up to record levels, and with the decrease in volume, loans are closing in record time. You need to call the only company that I recommend, my friend Mark Livingstone and his team at Cornerstone First Financial. Call now, 202-625-1221 or cornerstonefirst.com. Just like the weather, the housing market is heating up.
Yep.
And the professionals at Cornerstone are standing by. 202-625-1221 or cornerstonefirst.com. With 20 years in the business, a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau, and hundreds of great reviews, why would you call anyone else, including my review? I love them. Whether it's a refinance or a purchase, call Cornerstone. Because Cornerstone is a direct lender, they can guarantee to meet or beat any offer. Remember, 202-625-1221 or cornerstonefirst.com. Call now. Cornerstone First Financial. Personal attention from application to closing.
Mike, I saw Mark three times this past week. One this morning, one on the trail when I was walking with my beautiful wife in Dumbarton Oaks, and one the week before, just... The guy, can't see more of Mark from Cornerstone. I see him all the time. He's working
it's
all
really
the time.
It's really cool.
He's a good
it's
guy.
Nice to really come in here and talk about him after I've closed on a refi, which I did last week. Yes, Rob Spiewak. Nice.
Just a little button on that Walenda interview. There is an old movie, and I don't recommend the movie on the whole because it's very cheesy, but it's called The Greatest Show on Earth. And if you ever want to stream it, there is some great footage, actual footage of Ringling Brothers setting up that arena and doing that work from the 1950s. It's a Cecil B. DeMille picture that's sort of, the front of it is sort of coached as a documentary of the circus. It's very dramatic. But if you want to see when he talks about the organization and the size and the scope of that circus when it was touring, look at that movie because it's really quite impressive.
I didn't know if, I didn't want to go. And when you got this interview, I don't think I even made a big deal of it to you, but I have watched every single one. I didn't see the volcano one, but I have watched so many of his performances, and there is something about him. And I don't know if I'm alone or whether other people resonate with the guy, because you watch him and he's just, how do I put this in the word? I didn't want to go into it when I had him on the show because we didn't have much time to talk to him. But the vibe I've always felt about Nick Walenda is... a lot of daredevils. I'll even include Evel Knievel with the jumping and the just, it, there is an amount of hype that surrounds these events.
It's showbiz, yeah.
But, and it's a performance, right, and it's showbiz. But the thing about what Nick Walenda does, it's just the ultimate real deal of a daredevil.
When you
are going across the Grand Canyon untethered, and you are looking at the helicopter shot or the drone footage
of him doing that.
It's the real deal. So when you get to the end of that, even when you're dealing with, Natalie Morales talking to us on that, you get to the end of that and you're going, he really, it's just an amazing feat
David
performed.
David Blaine and Evel Knievel and all the others can take a lesson from him, because what happens is when all is said and done, and I can prove this with tangible events, he's bigger than the event. He always is, because what he does is so impressive. When he did the New York, I think it was over Times Square, we were actually down for Michael's baptism. Oscar and I were
watching it together.
We all watched it together. And
right.
When the three of us, this might surprise
people. Remember,
it was
appointment viewing. Everybody, why? The viewership's amazing for these
events.
This
may surprise people, but when the three of us sit down and have a drink and watch TV, we may be a bit snarky.
Yeah.
And that started with Willie Geist and Natalie Morales. But once the event started,
your living room
fell silent.
It's very, very
because
cool.
You got to respect the drive.
The
too.
Talent is bigger than the event because it is so real. And that's what's so cool about him.
Neat get. Thank you very much. So put that, all you people giving Rob a hard time, including me. That's a good get. Don't you think, Oscar?
Don't get happy, Mike. That's what I always say.
I don't get happy. How can I get happy when you walk into the middle of the interview?
No,
he didn't. He came in right at the beginning.
Oscar was actually, Oscar right before the show was in outer space.
Ooh. Oscar was almost banned from the studio
yes.
because he was running late. My instructions were he doesn't walk in while we're in the middle of interviewing
Mr.
Do you think
Spineless Pony Boy is ever going to lock me out?
No, he wouldn't. No, but Maddie, would you have barred Oscar from coming in the studio?
Oh, yeah, I was ready.
With great joy.
I believe Maddie. Ready.
When you issued the decree, I saw her lick her lips. She was like, boy.
Yes.
You know, that's fun. I like talking to people like that. It's really, really exciting for me. And as far as the, especially on the heels of reading about or watching the documentary about the Catholic priest and faith, I have to make it clear about the way I feel about faith. I might be screaming about Catholic priests and all of this, and I might be talking about how organized religion has been responsible for many, many ills. I believe all of that. Mm-hmm. I skew, unfortunately, towards the Bill Maher feeling of religion. I also skew towards the belief that I am not somebody who's going to disrespect someone else's faith. I could never do that. My mom had too much faith for me to do that. And is there anybody who would begrudge a guy that is on a high wire above the Grand Canyon without a tether from maybe the, mentioning Jesus a few times?
Oscar might do it.
Oscar don't mind. Everybody has their own God. My people, they pray to a piece of toast that looks like the Virgin Mary. Like, I really can't go too far on this.
Yeah, and you got those candles. I like those tall candles that have Jesus on them. They're nice.
They're hot.
Right next to Inca Kola.
Listen, I asked the guys, and maybe later in the week we can all bring our top 10 list in. I decided that I would give you my top 10 list, and where are we in the show? Okay, I got time to do this.
Yes.
My top 10 list of, these are movie stars, the prettiest movie stars, the prettiest women, and the prettiest men.
Are the lists exclusive, and so there's 10 of each?
They're 10 of each. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, because yes. if you
10 men and 10 women.
You could
have
done
10 men and 10 women.
I'm just being clear.
That's what I have here.
All right,
and
David.
Some of these will fascinate you. All right, so I don't know where this came from, but I'm watching a movie. And I said, oh, wow. And the first person on this list that I wrote down, it's Diane Lane. And I watched Diane Lane and I said, Diane Lane mm-hmm. has always been, for years and years and years, she was a child star. And then when she grew into a beautiful young woman and she has continued to stun,
I think, for
Diana. Well, I mean, younger, if you go back, she's, I think, a child star.
No,
I think she was a child
20s.
Star, but we don't. The 20s. She was beautiful.
Not in the 1920s. He means her
20s. Roaring
20s. Not the roaring 20s. What's the matter with you?
She's not the first on my list. I don't know if I prioritize
these. And
these
are in no particular order, right?
So, not particularly. No, thank you. But I am very particular.
I understand. And fastidious.
Oh, she is pretty.
Why would you be surprised?
Thank you. Let me turn that up. I want to turn my bell up a little bit right there.
Number
two.
She's been pretty for some time.
I'm going to give you number one because I think I did prioritize.
Okay.
Diane Lane was number three. Number one, Grace Kelly.
Mike.
Do you know who Grace Kelly is?
I concur with you on that. And I always have. I think there's
Grace
a classic.
She was a dancer of note.
No.
No. Look up Grace Kelly.
Singing in the rain. Sean
Kingston. You're way too beautiful, girl. That's why it'll never.
Look up Grace Kelly, Oscar.
I know. Let me pull it real quick. Hold on a sec. Grace. This is the East Egg and West Egg. The Great Gatsby.
Nope.
No? Oh, Jesus. Let me think about this.
I probably should have provided you with a photo.
What is she famous for?
She's famous for movies, and she's famous for marrying the Prince of Monaco.
She retired
Prince
at the
Rainier.
Height of her Hollywood career.
To become a princess.
To become a princess.
Oh, she's a smoke show. Jesus.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Any news?
Number two on the list, Charlize Theron.
All right.
That's easy. All right. That's everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. Number four, after Diane Lane, Halle Berry.
I agree.
Good call. Halle Berry.
Prince Rainier?
Yes.
He's a
Prince
sweaty
Rainier,
dude.
Yes.
Yeah. Sweaty dude.
But
keep up.
Pretty girls
keep
made
up
him,
with this.
Made
all right, we're
nervous.
Back. Grace Kelly was 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, but Halle
Next,
Berry's
I think
fantastic.
We were talking about her on the show, Audrey Hepburn. Audrey Hepburn is
yes.
another one of
overrated in my eyes.
Okay,
what?
Thank you. Yeah,
see
no, that's
everywhere.
All right. That's okay. I can leave. The late, and I'm so sad, Kelly Preston. Loved everything Kelly Preston did.
Top three. I thought she was
beautiful.
Three.
Absolutely. Now, here's a wild card. Lauren Bacall.
Mike, I think that's a great choice.
Bogey and Bacall.
I saw By her way, once. Did you know that?
I included in my show prep today the thing that Rob might have a problem with. Humphrey Bogart, vastly overrated.
Oh, this is not overrated. This is not okay, this statement. Yeah.
Lauren Bacall, overrated. Gorgeous. Yeah. Jeez.
Gorgeous in her very young. Wow. And she had beautiful eyes. She had absolutely gorgeous
I saw
eyes.
Her in New York City when I saw the second time I saw the producers. She had seats row in front of mine. And still quite fetching, even as an older lady.
When she came out as a judge on American Idol, I think it was American Idol.
Lauren Bacall? America's
Got Talent. No, Jennifer Lopez. Mm-hmm. She's on my list next. Jennifer Lopez is a woman that manages to look stunning always, and I love her pictures, I love her TV, I love her movies, I always have. Here's a wild card, you might not remember this one, Sienna Miller. Sienna Miller is in my top 10,
I remember
my
the
top
name.
10 list.
Is she somehow affiliated with Johnny Depp?
She may have been associated with Johnny Depp. Sienna He's Miller, a bit of a whore, so I'm not sure.
not she. He
is a bit of a whore, yes. Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And coming in at the last, not last but certainly not least, ladies and gentlemen, Sharon Stone.
Yeah. And Those Sharon my, Stone, I think, gets credit for being attractive and beautiful for an extensive length of time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
She's so annoying, though.
Lately, she's been a little bit of an publicity hound.
She was great in Total Recall. And Basic Instinct, I think, honestly, maybe for me, is overrated for what was done.
I still think she always looked great for a very long period of time. And true. She still looks great. She looked great in the Nurse Ratched series that was out there a while ago. All right, let me get to the guys, and then we can be done with this. Cary Grant. You go back and look at an old Cary Grant, classic good luck. By the way, the way I determined this was men that I was so inclined, I would be with. You know, I would love to be with
men
for
that you
one
want
night.
To be with.
Rumor has it Cary Grant might want to be with you as well.
Well, that's true, but that's a rumor.
Do you do a Cary Grant impression?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Love it.
Well, that's great that Mike O'Mara said
that. Yeah, he was
a
man's
man. That's great. Yeah, it's great that Mike O'Mara said that. Archibald Leach is my real name. Yes,
Cary Grant was never did talk shows because he says, I don't have anything to say.
George Clooney's number two. There
it
is.
Yes, of course.
No, I didn't want the fanfare. That comes at the end. The ding comes at the beginning.
There you go.
Thank you. Brad Pitt. There's a scene. All right. And this is, I think I'm maybe up to 7 or 8% gay.
Okay.
Now. There's a scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that has Brad Pitt up.
Yep.
Oscar, we're kindred spirits.
Me too.
We are.
He beat me by about 1 second.
Very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Up on the roof working on the antenna.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Look around. You're like, gorgeous.
Not only is he sexy, but he's fixing a television, and that's
now,
hot.
Now, here's a guy that we've made him, that I've done impressions of for a long time. But he's no longer with us. But back in the day, you go back and look at a movie called The Great Escape. And tell me that he's not one of the best looking people ever to grace the screen. James Garner. James Garner, back in the day, was the man.
What about
was
Mike?
The man.
Look at season one of Maverick. He's very good looking in Maverick as well.
Maybe. But he's a good looking dude.
Yeah.
Now, this is more, I think, on the charisma side than on the... On the pure sexual side. Denzel Washington has a way about him that makes him dreamy.
Especially the younger Denzel.
No. I'd take him at any age. Any age. This last movie, the details, whatever.
Where he's a little sloppy?
You're like, fine. I just think about him on The Equalizer.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about Mike being with James Garner for one night.
This may be the top of the list right here. Paul Newman.
Yeah.
Paul Newman, dreamy Paul Newman. Absolutely. And then.
What era Paul Newman?
What's that?
If you had to pick an
cool
era.
Cool Hand Luke.
Okay.
Paul Newman.
Okay.
I'll take him during his Paul salad Newman. Dressing days.
Okay.
He looks like he'd take care of me.
That was his whole career. Half was great. Mm. Here's, and of all the men on this list, this is where I would just go, please take me now.
Oh, no.
I would say, I would present to this man.
You would present?
Sean Connery. Sean Connery. The late Sean Connery. Wait, I think Sean Connery. I like my men rugged.
Yeah, you know
I
what?
Like my
you presented. Rugged. You presented to Sean Connery. Here's what you'd hear: pull those up and turn around.
He lived his life like James Bond in real life. He had a villa in the south of France.
Oh yeah,
like he was living his best life.
All right, so this next one here. I'm not enthusiastic about, but I think a lot of people were, and I put him in there because I put Paul Newman in there. Robert Redford, back in the day, all the president's men.
Exactly
Robert
what
Redford.
I was going to say. The Sting, Robert Redford.
Right. Here's a name you may not know. You may not know this name, but I'm going to put it on there because I think he's so unique and gorgeous. Henry Golding, ladies and gentlemen. Do you know the name?
I recognize the name. I have to look. I bet I'll know his face.
Crazy Rich Asians, the male lead.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's
new. He's a new face on the scene.
He's new and he's yours.
He's mine, yes. And
he's a
and
really now, good looking guy. You're
yeah,
right.
He is a wonderful
and, you know,
looking
I, that
guy.
Was
yeah.
probably Crazy Rich Asians that probably had all told the best looking cast of any movie I've ever seen.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the last on the list, but not least. Burt Reynolds.
Oh, no.
In his prime, Oscar, but, in his prime. In he, his
like
prime.
Like when he was in Cosmopolitan?
when he was, right before he started doing all the silly movies.
Okay, so prior to Cannonball Run.
Yes. That's
Deliverance?
My top 10.
I feel like
yes.
Burt would give
yes,
me an
Deliverance.
STD.
Oh, Deliverance. Fantastic
yeah.
in Deliverance.
Yeah.
Mm. Burt would give me an STD. Like he just seems
yeah.
too much of a dirty.
Yeah, there's a little dirty there. Yeah. There's a little dirty. I agree with
you'd
you there.
Say,
where
you
it
call
would
him
be.
Up and say, "Hey, Bert, I got herpes," and he go, "Ah, ha, ha."
Right. Yeah, I got herpes, Bert. That's my top 10
herpes
list.
Bert.
Have you boys decided what type of top 10 list you will
yes.
be coming
yeah,
up with?
Yeah, I have mine. As a matter of fact.
All right. All right. Well, we'll do them. We'll do lucky draw. We'll pick straws. Draw
I'm
straws.
I'm ready to
whatever.
Go.
All right.
And Oscar goes on Thursday, and Rob goes on Friday. What's Boyfriend. Yours, Rob?
Mine is outside of the Beatles, the Rat Pack, and Elvis, my favorite male singers of the 20th century.
Oh, very good. Very. Male singers.
Male
That's
singers.
And,
singers.
What's yours,
I have
Oscar?
Top 10 overrated black and white movies.
Okay, very good. That should be fun. That should be festive. We have to take a break.
Get the makers of Mank on the phone.
Yes. Mank. Oh, Mank, you're so controversial. Mank. 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 Gets an Academy Award nomination. God, life isn't fair. And Humphrey Bogart is overrated.
Not overrated.
We'll take a break. And come back with what my son wrote on his Nerf gun right here on the Mike O'Mara Show. Ab, Ray. Oh, we need the news now.
Yeah,
Sorry.
Yeah, of course. Al.
Hello. This is Al Pacino, and I love talking to you. Hoo-ah! Do you like to talk? Maybe you want to talk to your favorite hosts. Well, say hello to my little friends. Get ready to get on Zoom and be a TMOS talking head. Just send your info to Rob at MikeOmeraShow.com. Include a phone number! And prepare for a Friday morning you'll never forget. Hoo-ah! Do it now. Before you lose your mind and go crazy, just like me, because this is something you'll want to remember. I'm Al Pacino, and I'm not sure where I am. Hoo-ah!
Thank you, Al.
Phone
Appreciate
number.
Phone number. Thank you. Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. My machine is not working here. I'm trying to tell you who I'm going to talk about. I know it's a fine sponsor.
I know it's a new one, Mike. It's a great one. It's called Calm.
Calm. Calm. Oh, yeah. We were talking about Calm just the other day. Calm is a brand new sponsor of the Mike O'Mara Show. You're going to love it. We love it. Let me tell you about it. Here's the bad news. The world is full of uncertainty, and that might leave you feeling stressed or anxious. So do you want the good news?
Yes.
You can navigate change, feel more relaxed, and quiet your mind with Calm. We're proud to be partnering with Calm, the number one mental health wellness. Let me do it again.
Yes.
We are proud to be partnering with Calm, the number one mental wellness app, to give you the tools that improve the way you feel. You can clear your head with guided daily meditations. You can improve your focus with Calm's curated music tracks. And you can drift off to dreamland with Calm's imaginative sleep stories. And if you go to calm.com/TMOS, you will get a limited time offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes hundreds of hours of programming, and new content is added every week. Over
100 million people around the world use Calm to take care of their minds, sleep more, stress less, live better. With Calm, consider this ad as your mental health checkpoint. It's okay to need help sometimes, and Calm can provide support, and I think you'll get something out of this. For listeners of our show, Calm is offering a special limited-time promotion of 40% off at calm.com/TMOS. Go to calm.com/TMOS for 40% off, unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/TMOS, and we thank you. All right. Listen, my philosophy of how I am raising my son.
You're not going to do the homepage?
Oh, I'm going to do the homepage. I'm sorry.
Just want to make sure.
I got lost in the show. Yes, I am going to do the news. Would you play the thing? Well, why should I play it now when you screwed it up? I know I screwed it up. It doesn't matter. Why are you doing that? You just want me to play it? I just want to play it. No, I've not finished it. There, I played it anyway.
Corners of the World Wide Web and into your digital device. It's what you need to know. This is the homepage.
On these little commercials that I do when I asked to tighten those little things.
I will tighten more. I will tighten even more.
No, no, no. Do it the way I want it, which is right. If it's all jammed up together, that would be fantastic.
All right.
It would be very, very helpful. Thank you. When Prince Philip's funeral takes place on Saturday, it will be more than a focal point for national mourning. Many will also be watching for any signs of reconciliation between Harry and the rest of the royal family, especially with his brother, Prince William. It will be the first time Harry comes face-to-face with the royal family since he and his wife, Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, stepped away from the duties, and it'll be the first time they've all gotten together since the big Oprah deal. We're going to have to see what happens. If you're looking and you're an Anglophile and you'll be watching this, what to look for on Saturday, Harry and William. By the way, Harry's 36, William's 38. They're both expected to join other senior royals and walk behind their grandfather's coffin as the funeral procession makes its way through Windsor Castle. So if you care about that kind of thing, look to see what happens. I don't think you're going to get anything if you're looking for any kind of significance. They're going to be walking. They don't have to do anything.
There could be a fist fight.
Fist fight will be fun. Hey, this is good news for anybody that has people serving over there. President Joe Biden will withdraw all U.S. troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, the 20th anniversary of the terrorist attacks on America that were coordinated from that country. Biden will lay out his vision for the way forward in Afghanistan and the timeline for withdrawal when he speaks this afternoon. This will punctuate. He's going to go to the cemetery at Arlington to punctuate this decision. He will be going to Section 60 of Arlington to honor the sacrifice who died in recent American conflicts, and that includes Afghanistan. So I don't know how you feel about that. I think most of us are like, we don't even realize it.
That it's still going
people
on, yeah.
Killing Americans in Afghanistan for this period of time. Longest conflict ever. I saw this today. I said, okay, why are we there? What are we really accomplishing anything? Are we able to accomplish anything? Will they consider this a victory? Will this ramp up terrorism? I don't think so at this stage. I don't know. I don't know how you guys
Let's bring
about.
Our boys home.
I agree.
Bring them home.
If we are a society that has not got war that's happening right now in the front of our mind, well, why are we fighting it?
Guys, look, we can't fight every battle overseas. And there is policy. But we've been there for over a decade. We've got roughly a little over 2,500 troops, as you've heard in the past. The NATO has another 7,000. We can do our best, but sometimes it's just not worth it. You got to go.
Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's worth it. I mean, you just don't. First of all, you don't hear about it anymore.
That's
it. People are over there, you know, getting shot at. It happens. And it's tough. It's difficult. I mean, look, this area of the world, it's impossible. It's impossible logistically. And, you know, you have to realize what's the end game here.
Yeah,
there is none, unfortunately, like a lot of conflicts. That's the way it goes. Some people polled thousands of others all over the country and showed them a series of head-to-head matchups to determine what is the best state to live in. This is a survey. I don't like them normally, but they took the results and they ranked all 50 states by winning percentage. Of where is the best place to live. Overall, people were very loyal to their home state, choosing it in 77% of the matchups. But according to the rankings, the number one state overall
is Hawaii.
Yeah, it seems to be nice,
sense,
right?
Yeah, I believe
sure.
it.
Yeah.
The top 10 most popular states starts with Hawaii, followed by Colorado. Guess what comes in at number 3?
Oh, God. San Francisco.
Yeah, that's a good state.
That's not a state.
I would say
California.
I would say California.
That's Virginia.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Virginia.
I'm not sure I would vote for Virginia.
Followed by Nevada.
Ah.
No, you know what? This is a bad list. I love
followed by North Carolina, Florida, Arizona, New York, Georgia, and Texas.
Bad list.
They rolled a 50-sided die and just did it that way.
Maine, California, and Alaska all missed the top 10 by 1%, and I have to do it. I don't put these lists out for any other reason than I want to give you the bottom.
Of course.
All right. The bottom the least popular states are, here we go, Alabama, Mississippi, New Jersey, Arkansas, Iowa, Indiana, South Dakota, Missouri, Kentucky, and Kansas. Apologies to everybody listening on KCJJ.
This is a good list, Mike. State. I take it all back.
Mike, good list. Where on the list is St. Louis?
Yes. The state of St. Louis.
The state of St. Louis. Where
God
the Archers
damn it, trash can.
You know, we've been doing this show for a very
Sit
long
there
time.
Wrestling with this top-heavy, poorly designed piece of trash can that falls over every time I want to put something in it, for Christ's sake.
We've been
Stop
doing
it.
This show a long time, and this is the first time in history you've ever yelled at a trash can.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I did that. Fans of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood might appreciate this. The Pittsburgh house where Fred Rogers lived in the late 50s and early 60s is on the market. The asking price, $850,000. While Fred was living there, he was attending the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary.
No, the cemetery is much more recent,
not
Mike.
The cemetery.
You did that. Trash can.
Trash can.
The trash can's fault. And he worked as a composer, organist, and puppeteer on the Children's Corner. Fred and his wife, Joanne, had their two sons at that time. They were living in that house. So it'll be a house where Fred actually, got to know his neighborhood.
Mike, I spent some time in Pittsburgh for roughly a decade.
When he would invite his wife to the land of make-believe.
It's too much.
His son James is my age. His son James was born in 1959 when I was, and John was born in 1961. Won't you be, please won't you be my neighbor? And I didn't like that movie. Didn't care for it.
The movie was not good.
No.
It was too serious.
Yeah.
Like he was torn.
Yeah.
I didn't like that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And everybody, I'm sorry. You can say all you want about what a wonderful guy he was. I still get creeped out. Sorry, that's all there is to it. And now a little something something.
Thank you.
40 years ago, this will make you feel old.
All right.
40 years ago, Christopher Atkins got the break of a lifetime running around naked on an island with Brooke Shields in the Blue Lagoon.
Ah, yes.
And now he is 60, and he apparently still likes to be naked a lot, Damone.
Oh, no. And he does it a lot, Damone.
Atkins is looking for a new lady.
Uh-huh.
Hey, and she needs to be up for getting down twice a day because he's, quote, highly sexual. He adds, quote, as time goes by, of course, it's going to die down to maybe once a day. Oh, you're just so filled with vigor. So, ladies, if you're wondering just what kind of equipment Christopher is working with, well, there's this, too, that was included in this story that I will share with you now
on
a very homoerotic version of the Mike O'Mara
show. I'm sorry
he
didn't make your list, Mike.
A few years after Blue Lagoon, he got cast as a swimming coach on Dallas. I don't remember that. Do you?
That has to be in the waning years of Dallas. I don't remember that.
Well, the network told him that he had to quit stuffing his Speedos. And he says, quote, I didn't even know what stuffing was at the time. So there's that. That's him saying not only does he want it twice a day, but he's got a, Anyway, the internet is alive with people reacting to this post, and most of them are just throwing up in their mouth.
Mike, if this guy maybe put a little more drive, that the same type of drive that he has in his ding-dong into his career, maybe he would have done something else.
Yeah.
That's right.
Blue Lagoon 2.
Yeah, ding. He looks good. I saw a recent picture. He looks pretty good.
Real
he looks pretty good.
Good.
But, won't be on my list.
We'll take a break, and then I will tell you about the Nerf gun. Because this is therapy. That's why I do that show. It's why I talk to a trash can. We'll be right back on the Mike O'Mara Show. What's wrong with me?
Hey, y'all, I'm Luke Bryan.
Hi, America, this is Luke Bryan, and I won't be satisfied till I get every one of your redneck dollars in my wallet.
I'm here with Katy Perry, Lionel Richie, and he wears real tiny little jackets.
This is going to work, bro. I mean, this is going to be good. Right?
I make my own beer. It tastes like...
Take it from country music doofus Luke Bryan.
Hi, this is Luke Bryan, and I never shave my neck.
From shiny new licorice hats to red Solo cups,
I've got goose flesh.
The Mike O'Mara Shopping Center has got you covered for all your hillbilly shopping needs.
Golly.
Just click the shopping center banner at MikeOMaraShow.com. Ain't that right, Luke?
That dang old internet, man. Click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show, brought to you by Legacy Box, one in a million update. Legacy Box is a super simple mail-in service to have all your videotapes, camcorder tapes, film reels, and pictures digitally preserved on a thumb drive, DVD, or the cloud. So many memories are one in a million. They really are. Wouldn't you love to enjoy them and pass them down to future generations, ensuring that you and your family's legacy is digitally preserved and shared? What is that music you're playing in the background?
This is Blurred Lines.
Okay, it's so faint. You know, when I hear Blurred Lines that faintly, it sounds like somebody's in the trunk of my car. Anyway.
Not again.
Yeah, we love Legacy Box. Recently, they surpassed 1 million customers, and we're thrilled for that.
Yes.
We've been associated with them for a long time. In celebration of this milestone, Legacy Box is offering 50% off for our listeners. Get started preserving the moments that have stood out in your life today. Legacy Box is something you can order in minutes and enjoy forever, just like we did. I have amazing film of my parents in Bermuda from the 1950s. Includes the plane they flew on to get over there. It was a big deal for them back then.
It was made of wood, wasn't it?
It was a wooden plane. Orville and Wilbur pushed them off the beach.
The beach!
And they went to enjoy your Legacy Box, people. Go to legacybox.com/TMOS to join more than a million other families who've used Legacy Box. I love the part where my mom actually doesn't get carried across the threshold. My father just pulls her by the hair into the cave. Just a fraction of the regular price. Take advantage of 50% off today and send in your Legacy Box whenever you're ready. Go to legacybox.com/TMOS and save 50% off while supplies last, and we thank you, Legacy Box. All right, now look, I've told you again and again, and that's probably why I jumped into this, because I want to get it out of the way.
Right.
I've told you how my philosophy of weaponry and guns, I'm not really squelching this with my son,
right,
because he's interested
in
this.
Well, you're trying to fight it forever.
Yeah. You can't fight this. I went to a birthday party for a friend of his, picked my son up, and they all had Nerf guns. The Nerf gun for the 7 and 8 year old right now is the thing. You can go to a Target or a Walmart, and you can look in the aisle and see that Nerf guns have now their entire section that has exploded.
Has it surpassed Lego? Because Lego is a huge section too.
Probably not.
Probably on par with.
Lego would skew younger.
Okay.
I think, because we went to my buddy Millsy's house, and his daughter's 1 year younger than Michael and is into Lego.
Okay.
That's the way it goes. So I don't know what to do. I mean, I think that I'm just trying to let it. What's that?
What's the problem?
I worry about it. I worry, will this transition into a fascination with other guns and things. I don't like guns. I don't like kids with guns. I don't like fascination with guns. These are toy guns that shoot little darts out, and I know they're fun. I'm 61, and I think they're fun.
Do you think maybe if you drew a total stopgap and said no guns at all, it might make them even more exciting to him?
That's why I let him do it.
Yeah.
I don't restrict them in any way. I let him have as many. However, the other day, I come into the den. And the living room, I should say. We have a small house. We don't have a den. We have a room.
A common room.
And I come into the room, and my wife says, look at this. And she points at this little Lego gun that he's got, and he's written on it. And he's written on it in magic marker. And it says on the side of it, born to kill.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Not laugh out loud funny, although Oscar's stifling a laugh right now. It is...
Yeah, it's a, why are you shaking? Don't just shake your head. We're doing an audio. You're sitting there giving me this rueful.
Well, you're still talking.
You have nothing to say, right? No. Because it's awkward, right? Yes, it is. It's awkward. How do you think I felt as the father when he's writing that? My little vampire son's out there writing that on his gun.
What you need to do is focus on the positive. Was everything spelled right?
Yes. See, but it wasn't good. It might have been kill to born. It might have been done like
he wrote it upside down.
He wrote a little upside downish, you know, when he did that.
Did you approach him about this?
Yeah. And we told him it's inappropriate.
Okay.
And he scratched it out with his magic marker. No, I didn't encourage it. Hey, that's terrific. Now, look, I also know that he watches a lot of YouTube videos, and that was on the, you know, when you look at the movie Full Metal Jacket, the principal, Matthew Modine, has that on his hat.
I hope he's not watching that.
He's not watching Full Metal Jacket, but the troops did that, and he watches a lot of military history.
Yeah.
And a lot of them had that on his helmet. That's why, because I asked him, where did he get from? He said, I just thought it was cool to write it on it. And I didn't buy that. And then I pressed him on, and he said, I saw it somewhere, which he did.
A little kid doing that doesn't really get what really bothers me. And you're going to think I'm crazy. Is I hate it when people write stuff on the actual product with a marker.
You might be missing the point, Oscar.
Yeah, no, I get that. But you got to teach them early.
His
soul
is full of gadgets.
Really, you're really defacing.
There's no helpful. There's no resale value. I was thinking what you should do is instead
That's really not the lecture I was going to give him, that you're defacing the Nerf gun.
Yeah.
The gun that I played $19
for. It just screams DJs. And Rob, this B-Wack likes to do this. He likes to use a magic marker on the board, or I'm like, or on the label. And I'm like, I hate it when people do that.
Cite one example of that.
Some of our old boards, you would write right on the board. And I was like, what are you doing with like a silver marker or a gold marker? It would drive me nuts.
Never did that.
Did we have?
Well, you're disputing what he's saying?
I wrote on my board. I never wrote on a show board.
Yeah, but the fact that you'd write on your board is key to this.
In permanent marker?
Yeah, yes. If you want to label what it is. I mean, there was no way. I didn't have a label maker. I was in my home. I labeled it. I'm sorry, Oscar. I didn't realize that was a bugaboo for you.
It stops me now.
All right. Well, that's off the subject. I am legitimately concerned here.
Instead of scratching it off, maybe you should have done like a tattoo correction, like born to go to Kilimanjaro. And that way, you know, it's not so bad. And
you
it's
know,
also,
Shecky, you're the father, your kids. I know I've got older daughters, but I didn't have this problem. Did Robert ever have a fascination with toy guns?
No, he never was a gun guy. He never, ever was.
I had a fascination with guns, Mike. And if you looked at the Bolivian kid and the two Haitians running around the neighborhood with not bright neon squirt guns, we had real-looking guns.
Yeah, I remember.
And we looked like a little militia running around this little townhouse neighborhood.
There was a turn, probably when by the time Oscar outgrew guns, there was a turn where they started putting like a big pink plug in the end of the gun, and then the guns themselves would be like orange and yellow cap guns, so they wouldn't
All these guns are bright colors.
Yeah, so they don't look
orange.
Like
you grow out of it. You grow out of it, Mike. I think it's important, and I'm sure you've done this. Is you teach him what this actually means outside of the world of make believe.
He will.
Well, there'd be a way to do it.
In.
I don't want to show him the horror, but I mean, I tell him constantly, you know, I don't like guns, and you know, real guns are horrible. Real war, Michael, is horrible. It's a horrible thing. Doesn't seem to land.
And you should.
It doesn't seem to land.
It will.
Bright kid.
I think it might be on the Outdoor Network. It's with Ted Nugent, and I think he says, "You can't grill it till you kill it." So it's one of these things.
I don't want.
Well, he could be a hunter. He's in Florida.
I don't want that. I don't want him to be like your radio partner. I don't want him to love guns and have 50 guns in his house. I don't want that. Yeah. I find that dangerous.
And
I think
also,
that's extremely dangerous. It scares me.
No child should ever be exposed to Ted Nugent in any way. This is not good. This is not
totally
a good thing.
I totally agree with that. But I also agree with Oscar that I think it will run its course.
Yeah.
I pray to God. I pray to God.
Video games with guns are making people go out with real guns and take same deal.
No, I don't. I wouldn't let him do that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I let him play, Battlefield, whatever.
Yeah.
That's fine.
If he's a good kid at heart, he's not going to, God willing, become
he's got a good
another
base.
Statistic.
Yeah, he's got a good. And I think what it is he saw it. He latched onto it because it was associated with something maybe he thought was cool. He didn't realize what he's writing. He doesn't know what that means.
Yeah,
he's just
you're right.
Parroting it.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
Now the digging.
Or I'll be 70, and there'll be a figure standing over my bed, and I'll hear a click.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's like, just make sure he keeps getting enough Nerf bullets, and he'll be okay. Right.
No, just exactly. I think the main takeaway is this: before you write anything on any of your toys, run it by me, and we'll get you a piece of tape.
A dyno maker.
He's still getting back to defacing the tape. Yeah, can't get out of
it. It's exciting that you're on
property.
An 8-year-old birthday, he's going to get a brother label maker for his birthday.
We'll be right back, everybody. Hello there. I know it might seem counterintuitive and maybe even silly to take advice from a promo, but I'm something of a famous radio pitchman. So this is something you can believe in. My mother always said that you can trust a man with facial hair. And if you have any confidence at all in the wisdom of a mother, it's time to stare at my drawn-on mustache and heed my words. Do you need a little more laughter in your dark, secluded, lonely life? Sure you do. You need the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. For pennies a day, the Bonus Show will take you from zero to hero. And all the ladies will be digging your scene. Grab it at MikeO'MaraShow.com. You'll be glad you did, and we'll be glad for you. Buy the Bonus Show and make me smile. A big, flashy, fake, insincere smile. You earned it, Pajango. Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. Spring is here.
Yes.
You had better get your lawn back on track. I already have. It was a snap thanks to Sunday. Very simple name for a very simple product to know. Sunday is more than a lawn care product. It's a customized lawn plan that works with nature. They take out all of the guesswork and unwanted chemicals so you can grow a beautiful lawn that's better for everybody. I just went to GetSunday.com, put in my home address, and their free lawn analysis tool took care of the rest. Sunday sends a tailored nutrient plan right to your door, right when you need it. I just took delivery of my second treatment of the season. So easy. All I had to do was attach the ready-to-use pouch to a garden hose and spray. Lawn care used to take up a whole day. Now it takes less than 15 minutes. I've done it. It works. You spray your lawn and look at the green. This stuff really works. The grass looks better. Let Sunday take the guesswork out of growing a greener, more beautiful lawn this spring. Visit GetSunday.com/TMOS to get $20 off your custom lawn plan at checkout. That's $20 off your custom plan at GetSunday.com/TMOS. Now let's open the thing. You got to spin it right now, ladies and gentlemen. It's Rob Spiewak's Digital Dumpster.
Here is a pretty good rock and roll duo.
What are you holding up? I'm sorry.
It's a professionally made label that says alcohol, hand sanitizer, wipes.
Doesn't that look so much better than someone's messy handwriting?
Yes, it does. Label, I understand what you're saying. Are you saying that Rob's a Sharpie? Right? We used to complain about it at a radio station, not with Rob, but with people that would. It's the lazy DJ. Because DJs are the laziest people in the world.
Yes.
And they would handwrite on a. Now, I don't know if you did that, Rob.
I typed my commercial labels, and I also took great pains for when we were doing like the wacky tapes, like the big wall of tapes for the Don and Mike show back when we played cartridges.
Yes.
I was amazingly fastidious with my labels because it was my job to be able to find them. So I needed to have them that I could recognize them quickly. I'd use colors. I'd sometimes even like actually cut out a piece of label that would say the name of the movie and put it on the cartridge so I could see it from across the room. So, I mean,
there you go.
As far as labeling
cards. What do you say to that? Look, That's pretty detailed.
What annoys me is the same reason when you had a restaurant or you walk in an establishment, you see signs that even say now for these days, like COVID, please wear masks at all times. I see a sign that says that, and if it's not like hung up properly and it's just taped on, it screams.
The Walgreens. The Walgreens. The lazy Walgreens where there was more goddamn scotch tape on the window with all their little crap that they have. Tape, 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 tape. And even if you had two-sided tape and you put it back, so you just got the outline of the thing.
So it doesn't really look dirty.
Not scotch tape. Well, when I took over that joint, my joint, my restaurant, I had to scrape more goddamn scotch, nasty cigarette burn tape off the walls. And I boycotted. I said, there will never be. It's one of the things. You went into O'Mara's, you never saw a scotch taped sign.
Exactly.
Ever. When I was in there. Mm-hmm. Hated it. You see it. You go into a restaurant right now and you see scotch tape on the wall with something, don't eat there. Because it's gross and it's dirty.
You'll probably find tape in your food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tape and bugs.
What if the grade for the restaurant, that sign, it says B or even C? I guarantee you if somebody did a study and looked at all the C, D restaurants, all taped.
Yeah. All scotch tape.
Yeah.
Go ahead. It's like, hey, we don't take Amex.
Right, you know what I love? I love when you see a C-graded restaurant and they've got the C in the window, but it's been there so long that it's faded and curled, and you know that...
Because the tape wears out.
Well, but the thing is you think, wow, they've been graded C for that long? Don't you think in the time that it takes for a sign to fade, maybe right. You could up your game a little bit? Mop the bathroom.
Sir.
All right. So two pretty substantial rock icons got together and released a post-COVID sort of a song celebrating the fact that we're coming out of this. Dave Grohl and Mick Jagger. Now, Mick Jagger has this song, and he calls Dave Grohl. Dave Grohl does drums, guitar, and bass on this record. And
okay.
Mick Jagger sings. It's just cool to know he's just turned 180 years old. And Mick is still getting it done. Look, easy sleazy.
I literally have my finger on the explosion. Can't do it. It's the vibe. That's what that's what the great ones do. The vibe is what? Coming out of COVID,
yep.
And we're ready to have fun?
Yep. This could be the song of the summer. This could be.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Johnson and Johnson. Blood clot, yeah.
Sorry about that.
That's
sad.
Sorry, I did it again.
But you know what? I think what makes that so great is, of course, Mick Jagger is a great rock singer, maybe the greatest. But Dave Grohl knows all styles of music. He plays that like a Rolling Stones record.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so
I like it.
Cool. I do, too.
I like
it. It's called
Very
Easy
cool.
Sleazy. It dropped yesterday. So I think this is cool. A family has a Ring doorbell, and they set out snacks, for their mail carrier and delivery people, and a lot of stuff, Gatorade, water, chips, power bars, all this stuff, and they captured a mail carrier. I think he might have actually been a UPS guy. He's so happy to see this.
I appreciate the love. Oh, this is nice. I'm going to take some Pringles. I love this. Baby, they got water, Gatorade, chips, and cookies. I never leave this. I'm coming back for lunch and dinner. Thank you.
I love it. I think it's so
That's
cool.
I love the idea. Mm-hmm. I'm going to
so
steal
cool.
the idea for the trash guys and
so cool.
for the mail carriers.
Yeah. Make sure the trash guys
fantastic.
Know you're not putting out like expired snacks that they want taken away. It's make sure you label that it's not trash and make a sign. Don't tape it.
I will. Yes, sorry. Okay. Thank you. Now I'm really thinking about it. I'm getting distracted. I've been distracted for the whole show. I was excited to have Nick Willenda.
Now, you had a girl and then you had a boy. Oscar, yeah. You're barren.
Yes.
We had a girl, and then we had a boy. Did you do any, and there's like weird superstitions almost, you know, like old school stuff. Did you do anything to try to determine the gender of your child before it was born?
Nope.
Okay, us neither. Did you?
I will tell you this, that during that particular time was just, you've seen Mrs. O'Mara.
Yes.
And, you know, I chased her around the house all the time. That was one of my times where I was like Christopher Atkins. That's all I can tell you.
Yes.
You know, those days are long gone.
Right. No more chasing?
Now I get rejected and I just walk away. You know, I say, you think maybe, no, all right, bye-bye. See you later. See you in a month or two.
That would have really changed the mood on the set, or actually during the movie, The Blue Lagoon. If Brooke
well,
Shields
they were
had been
children.
That way.
They were children, so be careful.
Yeah.
All right? Be careful now.
Well, they had it.
Mr. In Territory You Don't Belong In, please.
They had a baby in that movie, though.
Yeah, they had a baby in that. They did. Funny.
How do you remember that?
He just doesn't. I did too, but I didn't remember it off the top of my head. I read the story and then did a little look at it.
Oscar, let me tell you something. Back in the old days.
He's funny.
Back in the old days, you watched what was on HBO. Because that's all you had. There was no CNN.
That's pretty naughty.
It was naughty. And you know what?
It was.
Not okay. I withdraw all remarks.
Okay, thank you.
But I hope Christopher Atkins finds a lovely partner.
Thank you. All right, let's move on.
All right. Anyway, they figured out a way that you can actually...
They had a baby, you know, Oscar.
There's a plot point.
Might be the funniest thing you've said all week, I swear to God.
God, I
just
hope
with
not.
That look on your face. No, go move on,
all right.
Please.
They found a correlation to how you can determine the sex of your... And I should be saying sex, not gender. The sex of your baby.
According to a new study, women who are stressed during pregnancy are nearly twice as likely to have a girl. That story again, 2021 is going to be all girls.
So stressed out women will have girls. Maybe Carrie had a harder first pregnancy. I don't know. So there's that.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Speaking of little girls, I don't like when little girls have a temper streak. I think, you know, all children should be respectful. This little girl, this went viral. This is a short little TikTok thing. Don't tell this girl to chill out. She doesn't react to it well.
Don't tell me chill out.
Chill out.
Don't tell me chill out.
I love the fact.
Didn't like that.
I think she might be from the southern portion of these United States.
Can I hear that one more time,
of course,
please?
Yeah.
Don't tell me chill out.
Chill out.
Don't tell me chill out.
Shut up. I'm the parent. I'm the captain now.
Don't chill out.
Don't tell me chill out.
Chill out.
Don't tell me chill out.
So,
chill out.
Chill out.
Mike, Becky Sue.
Don't tell me chill out.
Ta 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 ta. Tana wanda te te to papa.
What's Nell? Can you do some Nell speak for us, please?
Absolutely. Winning the Tay Chickapay.
The movie is Nell with Jodie Foster. Mm-hmm. Did you know that he spoke Nell, Oscar?
No.
He speaks Nell.
Winning the Tay.
Winning the Tay.
Chick-a-pay. That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. That's like, you know, that's like a voulez-vous. You know, you just need to know. Hello. Yep. You just need to know certain phrases.
Winning the day, chick-a-pay.
If you ever went to the country
bring some
of Nell.
Will you bring some Nell in tomorrow?
Of course.
We had a good time with that show.
Yeah.
With that movie, I should say.
Show.
That show.
It was a variety show. It came after James Corden. It was the Nell. It's the Nell show. And now.
Fantastic.
Here's Nell.
Winning the day, chick-a-pay.
Winning a day?
Chick-a-pay.
Let's close with this. Aaron Rodgers, I still don't like watching him because I think, you said it before, Mike, don't let the football players have everything.
Yeah,
but he's hosting Jeopardy and he's getting a lot of positive. I've gotten several angry emails from people saying that we should like him. They're all from females.
Okay.
And they like Aaron Rodgers. But this was a moment last night that I rather enjoyed, even though he's being a little snarky. Let's close with Aaron Rodgers on Jeopardy.
In the 1960s, these Midwesterners earned 5 NFL championship trophies. Green Bay Packers? Dennis, go again,
Try title for 600.
There you go.
They swept over the NBA, winning the title every year from 1959 to 1966. Eric?
We're the Boston Celtics.
Oh, you know that one, huh? Okay.
So there you go.
Still, the energy is just like he's like athlete speak.
No. Yeah.
He's doing what he does in the postgame.
The bar was set so low with his first outing, but you're like, at least he's got something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now you know that one.
Yeah.
You know, since he's in his locker room.
Mike, you know who's hosting Jeopardy next week? I'm actually looking forward to this one.
Who's that?
This girl.
Don't tell me. Chill out.
Chill out.
Don't tell me. Chill out.
And then the week after that is Jodie Foster as Nell. Close up the dumpster, please.
Oh, my God. That's it. We got to get out of here. Our very, very special thanks to Mr. Nick Walenda, the king of the high wire. No, I don't want to play the lion. Thank you very much.
He was at the circus.
Nick's book is Facing Fear, available at Walmast at the TMOS Shopping Center.
I send you a corrected copy of that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
You did? But
yes.
I printed out the one that was not... We'll have to make a ruling tomorrow. I don't know. We'll have to make a ruling.
I can correct it with a Sharpie.
I read Walmast today 3 times without saying it until the end of the show. We got to get out of here for Rob Spiewak. Chick-a-pay. What is it again?
Winning a Tay.
Chick-a-pay.
Walmast.
For Rob Spiewak and Oscar Santana, Michael Merritt saying so long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Ciao, ciao.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
She wants a D, and she's going to get one.
It ain't over till it's over.
Oh, good for you.